Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Tom Hall. Welcome to Midday. Today, it's Midday on Cars with John Davis, our good friend and the host of Motor Week on MPT and PBS. We'll take your questions and comments about what you're driving and maybe that new or used car that you're hoping to drive. So give us a call, 410-662-8780, or drop us an email, midday@wipr.com. We'll talk about electric vehicles and the changing dynamics of the global auto industry. Under the second Trump administration, the United States has effectively reversed course on supporting American carmakers' moves to electrify their vehicle lines. Gone are most of the federal tax credits for EV consumer purchases, with proposals to replace the subsidies with annual fees to drive EVs and hybrids. Of the 16 million cars, vans, and sport utility vehicles sold in the United States last year, only 1.3 million of them were EVs. Analysts say increased global competition from Chinese EV makers such as BYD and Geely and the withdrawal of U.S. federal subsidies are now taking their toll on the prospects for American electric vehicles. John Davis can help us understand what all this means. He is the creative force behind Motor Week, which airs on MPT and PBS stations throughout the country. The show is now in its 45th season. It is television's longest-running automotive series. John's been the host and executive producer since the show's inception back in 1981, and he joins us on Zoom. Always great to see you and hear you here on Midday, John. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Tom. It's great to see you, and I'm sorry I'm not in the studio in person today, but it's delighted to be with you.
Well, we are glad to have you. However we can get you. I know you're busy taping these shows, which clearly you must have started hosting when you were 12. It's been around for 45 years, so, you know.
Good for you. I had a lot more hair, let's put it that way.
Right. Well, you're still full of great information, and that's why we are delighted to have you. We have a comment on Instagram. I love Midday with John Davis of Motor Week. So there you go. So
you've got a vote of confidence. It's wonderful.
A vote of confidence to start. So let's talk about the Iran war and the impact already. I mean, we will reach the 3-week anniversary of these hostilities on Saturday. We're not even 3 weeks in. But it does appear that the impact on the automotive industry is already being felt pretty far and wide.
Well, it certainly is as far as gas prices. I mean, I paid $5 a gallon in Finksburg this morning for a high test for one of our test cars. And that's up, I guess, at least a buck since 3 weeks ago. There is some evidence that there's a little bit of knee-jerk reaction with folks all of a sudden going back and saying, well, maybe I do want an electric vehicle. I suspect we'll see a tiny uptick, although right now most of the indicators look like we've had about a 40% drop in EV sales in the last 60 days from that time a year ago. And that's pretty much what we expected with the lapse of the government incentives. I would hope nobody would make an expensive purchase based on, what hopefully is a temporary event. However, one of the things that is also driving maybe an uptick in EV sales is there have been some terrific bargains on the market in the last few months, particularly vehicles like the Chevrolet Equinox EV, which General Motors was putting $10,000 to $12,000 cash on the base model to move them. And I know at least one or two people that have taken advantage of that very recently. So it's not just what's going on with gas prices. There are some very, very good deals out there because EV sales are down so much and they have a lot of them on the lots.
And, you know, as of this morning, about an hour ago, crude oil was trading at $95 a barrel. It got up to $110 a barrel for a little bit of time yesterday. The average price of a gallon of gas, according to AAA, yesterday afternoon was $3.58. In California and places like that, it's well over $5 as an average price. You just told us you paid $5 for a premium gas here in Finksburg, Maryland. So it's just hard to know how long, of course, this is going to last. Right. And it's hard to know you know, what that really will mean for consumers. It's interesting, this yo-yo of EV sales. I mean, you say they're down 40% before the war, and now there may be an uptick now that people are saying, hey, wait a minute, gas is expensive. Maybe we should start plugging them in. It's interesting.
Well, I'll tell you, one of the first things I did is I parked my large SUV with a V6 gas engine, and I have a little electric Fiat 500e, and it's been sitting in the garage for most of our really cold winter. I pull that out, and that's what I'm driving. So I still think, and I've always thought, that EVs make a lot of sense as a second car, as a commuter car. And it's times like this when it's a nice option to have. And if you can't go that route, take a look at hybrids, which is where the market really is headed and should have been headed for the last 20 years, but wasn't.
Of course, the gas prices are one factor here, but also we've been dealing with yo-yos of tariffs.
Yes.
Talk about how tariffs, since the beginning of the Trump administration, which is now, you know, a year plus into the second iteration of Mr. Trump's, you know, great obsession and affection for tariffs. Ultimately, where do things stand? The Supreme Court struck down the president's authority to impose tariffs on his own without congressional involvement. But that didn't stop them from coming in and going out, you know, for, you know, many months prior to that decision. How has that had an effect on prices and consumers, you know, affection for buying a new car?
I'm going to give you both sides of, I think, an answer for that. I know you've seen all the headlines that have proclaimed that car prices are up anywhere from $2,000 to $6,000 compared to pre-tariff times. And that works out to be about 2 to 6% increase on the average vehicle price. And that's probably, I think it's probably closer to the 2. But having said that, a much better number is to look at what the transaction prices for cars have changed over the last year. And they're actually
up. So what do you mean by a transaction price?
That is the actual price that someone pays on average for a new vehicle in the U.S. today.
Okay.
And if you compare the end of 2025 to the end of 2024, that number is up about $800, a little under $1,000, depending on, again, where you get your material from. But I use some industry sources that are well regarded. So it's up maybe 1%, 2% at the most, less than inflation. So it's way.
So 2,000 to 6,000 is way exaggerated.
Correct.
Oh, okay.
I think so, because what's happened is it's not that the automakers didn't increase their prices. They're giving more back. They have more incentives. Part of that is due because of electric vehicle sales down, but also sales in general are a little soft because people have been frightened away by a lot of the tariff talk. And it actually makes right now a really good time to buy just about any vehicle, probably one of the best times we've seen in the last 2 years. So, you know, all the stories have had a definite negative effect on buyer enthusiasm. They have raised prices, but the automakers need to move that metal, as they say, and they're giving you more back.
There is some rumblings in Annapolis. We're getting reporting just this morning from our Annapolis State House reporter, Sarah Petrovich, about a proposal to suspend the gas tax here in Maryland, maybe for just a month or so. Estimates are that at least the last time this took place, it cost about $100 million to the Transportation Trust Fund. Justin Reedy, who is the Republican whip, is in favor of this idea. Here's what Justin told Sarah Petrovich earlier this morning.
The net effect by the end of 22 was basically negligible. The funds were basically restored. There was no loss of sort of projected overall revenue. That's not to say you could cancel for 6 months and there wouldn't be loss of revenue, but for just a month, it essentially was not. It was about $100 million at the time, but then the year over year, It was backfilled basically.
So, you know, it doesn't seem to bother Maryland Republicans in terms of its impact on the fiscal health of the state. Is something like that, John, in your experience, you know, gonna really spur people to head to the dealership and buy a new car, or is it just gonna simply affect how and where they're driving their current car?
Well, both. I definitely think consumers would probably appreciate some kind of relief. I'm not convinced that anything like that has more than a very temporary effect. The rising gas prices right now have certainly not slowed people down, in my experience. So I think it's a nice gesture. I'm sure it will go over very well with voters. But in the end, I think it just exacerbates the state's already somewhat poor fiscal condition. So I'm not sure in the end, you know, consumers are still going to pick up the tab no matter what happens. So I'm not sure if it's, it might be short-term gain for long-term pain, if I could reverse the normal way that's quotes used.
Yeah, Jason Buckle, who is the Republican minority leader in the Maryland legislature in the House, had this to say about this idea.
It's really the only thing we can do to really impact gas prices in the short term. I don't think it'll cause a massive fiscal hole to the Transportation Trust Fund. I think it's something that can be repaired as long as it's on a short-term basis. And we hope that by April, by May, what's going on in Iran has largely concluded favorably for the United States and our interests, and oil markets return to normal.
So this is a proposal from House and Senate Republicans. They announced it this morning, and they want to introduce this emergency legislation to implement a 30-day gas tax holiday, given the fact that oil prices are up due to the war in Iran. And again, they're saying this is just immediate relief. It is the only thing they can do. The governor, Governor Moore, of course, he and the Democratic leaders in particular are working on filling a budget shortfall, another budget shortfall that's a couple of billion bucks last time I checked. The governor issued a statement today that says Marylanders need real relief, not a 30-day gas tax suspension that would blow a $100 million hole in our transportation budget at the same time that we're working to close Maryland's budget shortfall. If Maryland Republicans are serious about lowering costs, they should pick up the phone and call Donald Trump and tell him to end this missionless war instead of asking Maryland taxpayers to help pay for it. This war is costing more than $1 billion a day and driving up the price of oil, fuel, and everyday goods. The best way to bring prices down is to address the source of the pain, not shift the cost of Donald Trump's war onto Maryland's families. And this is from the governor's press secretary this afternoon. So, again, it's become a political thing, but it'll be interesting to see if sales of electric vehicles do get a bump. I mean, it's expected, as I understand it, that because sales were pretty rotten towards the end of 2025, there might be a little bit of bump anyway, even if the gas prices weren't spiking in the beginning of 2026, but then they would calm down again. Is that how you see it too, as well?
Yeah, I do. What's going on right now is there are a lot of leftover 2025 EVs sitting on lots. At least there was before last weekend, and those have been substantially discounted. But I have to tell you, between this time last week and now, the lots have cleared of a lot of those 25s. So prices are not as good as they were a week ago, but there's still some substantial discounts to be had, which probably will expire the end of March, especially if the hostilities are still taking place. So if you have been sitting on the fence thinking about an electric vehicle, you might do yourself a big favor of looking like today. Otherwise, you know, I would put it off until the market settles back down. It's pretty clear that we're going to have an oversupply of EVs for a while forward, because automakers can only slow production lines so far. And we've already seen a lot of the European and some of the Asian manufacturers pull new models out of the U.S. market. One of them just happened 2 days ago was the Volvo XC30, which is their smallest EV. And you know, it's a very nice, affordable little vehicle, and I'm sorry to see it go, but there are a lot of those sitting on dealer lots right now, and it's one of the last real good bargains out there. So, you know, it's a bargain hunter's time for EVs. It's not as good as it was a week ago, and but it's pretty good.
John Davis is my guest. He is the host and producer and creator of Motor Week on MPT and PBS. He's here to talk and talk about cars and answer any questions you have. Our number here at Midday, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wipr.org. If you're one of those folks that John just mentioned, sitting on the fence, thinking about maybe buying an EV, thinking about buying a used car, maybe you're buying a gas-powered car, maybe you're buying a hybrid, let us know. Let us know what you're thinking about and give us a call if you have a question about what the decision awaits you. 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wipr.org. We're going to take a quick break. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.
This is 88.1 WYPR.
And welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, coming up on the show tomorrow, guest host Gabe Ortiz will be here. He's going to speak with a local imam about how Muslims across Maryland are celebrating as Ramadan comes to an end. Plus, WYPR's John Lee has the latest on an unusual GOP primary in Baltimore County. It's a matchup between a MAGA Republican and a longtime gunpowder riverkeeper. As well, WIPR's Wamboy Kamau will report on a booming business of hair braiding over in Bowie. So that's coming up tomorrow on Midday with guest host Gabe Ortiz. If you've just joined us today, it's Midday on Cars with our good friend John Davis, the creator, executive producer, and host of Motor Week on MPT and PBS. So we are taking your questions and comments. Again, the number 410-662-8780, our email midday@wipr.org. So John, Representative Sam Graves, who chairs the House Transportation and Infrastructure Committee down in Washington, is proposing a $250 annual fee for people who own electric cars, and $100 as a fee for people who own hybrids. Because, of course, if you're not buying gas, you're not contributing to transportation trust funds like here in Maryland and elsewhere. What do you think that kind of thing? So it used to be EVs were highly subsidized. Now the pendulum has swung completely the other direction.
Well, a lot of states have already gone to making extra charges for EVs. And if my memory corrects me, I think it actually already costs more to register an EV in Maryland. I haven't had to re-register mine yet, so I'm not 100% sure on that. But it is a trend at the state level, and I'm not surprised to see it happening at the federal level. However, they've come up with these numbers, and they don't necessarily equate to what the average gas-powered vehicle is paying at the pump. So in some ways, and I believe this particular proposal is one of them, it will actually penalize EV owners more than what the gasoline-powered owners are paying. So as long as they keep it in sync with what, you know, the average internal combustion engine buyer is paying, I think it's fair, because after all, we use the roadways. But just picking a number and making a political stance without anything to back it up, I think that's wrong, and I think it will, it's counterproductive any way you look at it.
Got a couple of questions from listeners. This came from Annie in Towson. She left a message on the Midday listener line. She's got a question about her brakes.
I have a 2016 Juke whose brakes squeal, especially in humid or wet weather.
All right, so squealing brakes. John, what does that mean? What is your suggestion?
It can mean a lot of things. If this is happening all the time, it's certainly worth looking into. It could be nothing more than just the road. There's debris that gets caught in the pads, between the pads and the rotors. What it does is wears grooves in both. That's the squealing you hear. On the other hand, brake pads also have wear indicators, and when they start squealing all of the time, it's telling you the brake pads are almost worn out. So one way or the other, if it doesn't go away and if it's constant, she needs to have the vehicle checked out.
All right, got to check those out. And brakes, you know, part of the most important part of the car.
Indeed.
You want to make sure you can stop. We have an email from Jen who says, because new cars are all so expensive these days, I'd like to try to reduce waste. I'm thinking that my next car might be a used one. What are the pros and cons of buying a used car? And what are some tips for choosing a good used car? What do you think?
Well, a used car usually, and I say usually, is the smartest buy because it's already seen some depreciation. But you need to make sure that you check on any of the websites out there like Edmunds or even the car company websites to see if some vehicle in that class, you know, small, big, whatever that you're interested in, has some kind of incentive on it that might just make its price either lower or competitive with a 2 or 3 year old used car. I like to suggest that you try to not get anything much older than 3 years old. It's probably still has some form of a manufacturer's warranty left, especially for the powertrain, which is a good thing. And I think there's nothing wrong with looking for a used car, but look how much mileage it's got. You really don't want much more than 10,000 miles per year of age. And buy it from a reputable dealer, somebody that you would trust. I think people like CarMax are terrific. I think the used car lots of most franchise dealers are terrific. Be very wary about buying one from an individual unless you have a mechanic check it over. And that's kind of a good idea anyway. But absolutely, if you're looking for, you know, a bargain, a three-year-old vehicle is going to be probably your best bet as long as it doesn't have too much mileage. And look for obvious things of wear. Are the carpets worn? Are the seats worn? Things that they can't necessarily just buff up with a little bit of spit and polish.
That's interesting, John, because it seems to make great sense, you know, to get a car that's maybe no more
Absolutely.
Than 3 years old with, you say, only 10,000 miles per year. So that means you're looking for a used car that only has 30,000 miles on it. Would dealers have that many used cars like that in stock? That seems like a pretty new car to me.
They would normally have quite a few, and they do actually have quite a few, and many of them are off-lease cars, but it's not as many as it used to be because we're still have kind of a COVID hangover when new car sales were way down. But that volume is increasing, and we were talking about EVs. There's an awful lot of EVs coming off-lease over the next 12 months. So there again, if you're looking for an EV, since there's no real federal incentives anymore, a 2 or 3 year old EV, which probably has pretty low miles on it, is maybe a better buy than even a new one that's discounted.
We have an email from Kyle who says all tariffs on Chinese EVs should be eliminated. Domestic automakers have had decades of protection and squandered it in pursuit of profit on SUVs and pickups and other gas guzzlers. The Chinese vehicles are ready now. Dell says eliminate all of the Chinese tariffs as well. He said, we just purchased a new Subaru Forester, a touring hybrid, and we love the vehicle and get close to 40 miles a gallon. However, given the political landscape, did we make our move too soon? So let's talk a little about Chinese EVs. They are taking over the European market, and they are about to start having dealerships in Canada, and they'd love to have dealerships here. We talked about this virtually every time you're on the show, John.
Right.
What's the latest with Chinese EVs and its potential penetration into the American market?
Well, it's all about jobs. I mean, the Europeans are watching their once mighty automakers start posting huge losses, and that means layoffs, and that has political implications. So they are actually re-examining a lot of their low entry points for Chinese vehicles. The Canadians are probably going to be in the same boat. The auto workers are substantial employment base up there. So I think their dropping of tariffs was more their new alliance with the Chinese, sort of anti, you know, Trump in the U.S. than it was logical. Clearly, that's why the barriers are still here, trying to protect not only the workers, but also the U.S. companies which employ those workers. And this happened before. If you go back in history, we had the same situation when the Japanese were starting to come into the U.S. in force, and there were some protectionist rules put in place. It forced the Japanese to build plants here. And once they were employing U.S. workers, all bets were off. And even the Trump administration has already said that if the Chinese want to build plants here, he would welcome them with open arms. So I think that's the solution to that problem. And then the automakers are going to either have to figure out a way how to compete, or they will, unfortunately, face a round of bankruptcies, which is facing some of the major European automakers as we speak. So it's really about jobs more than anything else, and the politics that comes with them. On the scope of Chinese, I think it's a good thing that they're going to get their feet wet in Canada. As we saw when the Koreans first marketed, they went to Canada first. They got the bugs out because those cars were not ready for the U.S. And despite everything you read, there is absolutely no evidence that the Chinese vehicles will live up to the abuse that the average American buyer puts on them. And the last thing they want is a black eye because of quality. So they're going to learn probably in Mexico and in Canada where they need to buff up their situations. Their designs obviously have progressed very quickly. This new, much talked about Xiaomi YU7 looks like a able competitor to the Tesla Model Y and a lot of other vehicles. I haven't driven it, but a friend of mine in Detroit has had extensive time in it. He's very impressed. And if he's impressed, I'm impressed. So they're coming, but I don't necessarily think you need to believe everything you see on social media about them. They haven't been tested on American roads yet, and we are very, very difficult when it comes to abusing and finding holes in quality for vehicles.
So maybe a little off-Broadway before it hits the big time.
Exactly.
Here in Baltimore. Yeah. Let's go to the phone. Stephanie is on the line. Stephanie, welcome to Midday with John Davis.
Hi, I was calling. I have a Subaru Outback now and was looking to maybe transition over to a fully electric or a hybrid vehicle, and I love to take road trips. So I was just wondering what you would recommend for road trips maybe over 4 hours. Is it better to have the fully electric vehicle, or is it safer to go hybrid for the charging?
I think it's safer to go hybrid. Then you don't have to worry about the plug-in situation of charging. You have a choice between plug-in hybrids that give you a limited range, like it would be great for commuting and be all EV, and then have the gasoline engine to take over for longer trips. Since you are a Subaru owner, I would highly recommend that you look at the new Subaru Forester Hybrid, and they will probably be adding a hybrid to the latest Subaru Outback soon. The Forester Hybrid is a terrific vehicle, and it's delivering like 37 miles per gallon in our testing. It's going to be hard to find and a little expensive, but hybrids right now for most Americans are definitely the way to go, and it's why they are in such demand. And you will see a lot more hybrids, every manufacturer's rushing hybrids to the market, and a year from now, we're going to be swimming in them.
And of course, you know, President Trump has had longstanding antipathy towards electric vehicles. He's very pro-oil. He's anti-renewable energy. He has tried to completely eliminate all federal funding for charging stations to make them more plentiful around the country. Many states have sued to have that decision reversed. In fact, a judge just recently did reverse it, I guess last August maybe. So, you know, there are federal funds available now. They were frozen last year, but they got unfrozen, as so many things happen like that with this administration. There's a lot of uncertainty because it's just difficult to know what's going to be the case, you know, from week to week or month to month. But, you know, are people generally speaking finding enough places to charge just in terms of, because there's different kinds of charging stations. You and I have talked about that. You know, when people are taking a 2-hour trip or a 3-hour trip, can they find places to plug in?
That's a really good question. And the answer is not, unfortunately, not simple. It's not that there aren't a lot of high speed chargers out there. And these are chargers that charge your car up to 80%, which is the practical maximum, in, you know, a half hour to 45 minutes. The problem is a lot of them don't work at any one time. Studies say 40 to 60% of them don't work. Now, you do have an app on most EVs that will tell you, or on your phone, you can get them, that will tell you if that charger, wherever you're headed, where it is, and if it's occupied or if it's even working. But something that has happened that doesn't get a lot of publicity, a lot of the manufacturers are substituting the port on the car that we've been used to for the port that Tesla has put into all of its cars. It's called the North American Standard port, and that, and their chargers do work, and they are very numerous. So if you've got a vehicle that you've bought in the last couple of years, you need to do your homework and make sure you've got the adapter that would allow you to use the Tesla fast chargers, and of course, whether or not your car and manufacturer is allowed to use them. So there are actually some new options, but right now, in my opinion, the big problem is with the companies that own the charging stations. They need to do better jobs of maintenance and make sure that their reliability is up to snuff. More of them are being built, not as many as before, but it's not as dire as I think a lot of the press reports say. I know plenty of people that, for instance, they go from here to Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. There's plenty of charging points along Interstate 95, and there's quite a few when you get to the beach. You know, it can be done, but yeah, you have to do your planning.
But it does seem like Tesla is becoming the industry standard.
Yes, without question.
Yeah. So again, if you don't buy a Tesla, but your car can be adapted to use the Tesla charging stations, then that's probably going to be a good bet. Let's go back to the phones. Rebecca's on the line in Towson. Welcome to the show with John Davis.
Thank you, Tom. I'm calling to sing the praises of used hybrid cars. I needed one back in 2024, and the market was so tight. It took me practically 8 months to find one, and I did at Enterprise. They were using those cars in their fleet, but had decided, you know, on something else. I got this car for like with 32,000 miles on it, and they didn't do the bait and switch. And I was just so relieved when I got,
Rebecca, you bought it directly from Enterprise?
Yes, and I never really knew that. And, you know, they had them there on the lot. I got to test drive it, which a lot of dealers don't even let you do anymore. Yeah. So I'm just delighted with it, and it's the youngest car I've ever owned, and I hope it lasts a lot longer than the one I got totaled by a deer.
Oh, no, by a deer.
I'm glad you're okay.
Yeah, glad you're okay, and I'm sorry for you and the deer. But thank you for that call, Rebecca. I appreciate it, because that's a really good idea. John, have you heard about this new company, well, new-ish company called Aptera? Which is based in Carlsbad, California, and they are coming up with a car that has three wheels, so two in the front and one in the back. They say that the advantage of that is that it qualifies as a motorcycle, therefore it doesn't have all the restrictions and you know, registration requirements that a four-wheel car has, and some of them run on solar panels. So you don't even plug it in. You just drive it around and keep it out in the sun, and you've got enough juice to get where you're going. They've had a rough go of it getting started, but now they have a waiting list of 500 people who are trying to get one, and they're trying to up their production. But are solar panels on cars the next iteration of non-gasoline powered cars?
Not anytime soon, because their technology is way behind what the vehicle will use. Of course, with something like the Altera, it's probably got a small engine. It's not using nearly as much energy as your average four-wheeled vehicle. So they might be able to get some form of charging, but it really comes down to the amount of power that you get from a solar panel that can be transferred into electricity. I have very limited experience with small solar panels, but where I can tell you is where they have been used, particularly on, I think, the Toyota Prius. They're good for powering some of the accessories on the car, but not for actually powering the car itself. We've been down this three-wheel motorcycle route many times before. You can buy gasoline-powered ones from Bombardier and other manufacturers. They do qualify in some states as motorcycles, not all. And but you're giving up an awful lot of safety and protection just to save a little bit on fuel. So buyer beware, it's not the same thing as a four-wheel car with crash standards and airbags.
Mm-hmm. We're almost out of time. I got two quick questions for you. Charlotte says, are there any new cars in production that don't have big information screens on the center dash? I hate them.
Short answer is no. You can look at a vehicle, do your little bit of research, and see if it's been 5 or 6 years since it was totally redesigned, and go look at those, because chances are they have the smallest screens. But I don't think you can buy anything without some kind of an LCD type display on it anymore. And actually, they give you a lot of good info. You just have to get used to it.
So we got to finish up with one last question. This comes from our producer, our new executive producer, Amy Walters, who wants to know about the matte finishes on cars. I guess this is a new thing. I haven't paid attention to this. And she says, you know, if we buy it now, in a couple of years, are we going to say, oh my gosh, that was so 2025? Is it going to go out of fashion anytime soon? So let me ask you a fashion question here, John. What do you think of the matte finishes?
I pretty much don't like them. I think they make the car look like you haven't cleaned it in a long time. However, what the automakers are doing is they're now adding metal flakes to the to these dull finishes, so they aren't so dull anymore. So they kind of look kind of cool and classy when you walk up to them, but they still sparkle a little bit in the sun. So look for a metal finished or metal flake in your dull finish.
They're undulling the cars, isn't that?
They're undulling them very slowly, yes.
John Davis is the host and executive producer of Motor Week on MPT and PBS stations across the country. Show is now in its 45th season. It is the longest running automotive television program in the history of the universe. John, thank you so much. It's always great to talk to you, and I hope we can do it again soon.
Thanks, Tom. Anytime.
And quick break. When we return, a theater review with Midday theater critic Jay Wynn Russick. We'll talk about the new show from Mott and Bailey Productions. I'm Tom Hall. Stick around.
This is 88.1 WYPR.